This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
I really liked his, just knocked over my coffee.
And Brock Rahm.
This definitely isn't going in the episode tease.
Well, cool. Good job, me.
Welcome to episode 3, where we're going to focus on Garrett's role as a producer. This role is often used in different titles and often means very different things within the industry. So we're going to shed light on what it means for Garrett's role at Big Ten Network as a producer on The Journey.
3, 2, 1, clap.
I feel pretty good about that one.
Okay.
But I guess we'll kind of try and figure this out.
Yeah. Let's make sure this recording doesn't get out.
Hey, it's Justin here, and I just wanted to give a shout-out to APM for providing that track for us here on the Sports Creative Podcast. We're doing this podcast as an extension of the Sports Creative community on Slack, so if you're finding us and aren't part of the community yet, you can sign up for free at sportscreativeslack.com. So with that, let's get on to the episode. I wanted to start off with this one question that I got that I thought was really interesting and caused me to think and realize I could have given a much better answer later on. But the question was, if you were to give an elevator pitch to someone getting into the industry for what you've enjoyed about the industry and what keeps you involved and going with it, what would that be? So I want to toss that out to you guys to answer first.
Man, I got into it because I loved sports. It's why I started in the industry. I was actually on the newspaper and writing side in college when I first started, and just had a friend doing broadcast, and it was an opportunity to get into sports. So I went that route, but it is so much bigger than just being around sports now. I love the sports aspect of it still, but I've really come to enjoy, the creativity and just the way that every day is different. And I mean, I've gotten to see some really cool stuff and be at really cool events and talk to important people. And it's not like it's a glory thing. It's not like I need those big moments and big events and whatever to make the job feel worth it. But it's just really wild that things that, if you had talked to me when I was an 8-year-old, the idea of being inside a team's locker room after they just won a championship, I would have been like, wow, that's so cool. And I do that all the time now and I take it for granted, and I it's my job. And that's just, it's so wild to me that I get to do that. That's what I enjoy about it is I get to do things that 8-year-old me would have thought was the coolest thing ever. And when you're 8, you want to be the one winning that championship and you want to be the pro athlete, but obviously for 99% of the population that's not realistic. But I've still found another way to take the passion that I had for sports and get to add in my own personality and my own creativity. And it's a grind and it wears you out at times, and it's not always fun, but it's always rewarding, and it always, at least for me, ends up being fun in the long run. When everything's put together, when I'm working on a project and it's all put together and I get to see it, it may not be fun in the moment, but to be able to see the reactions of other people, or even just the little bits, sitting down with the athlete as I'm doing an interview with them, that's fun. I just love it. There's no feeling like it to me than to be able to be around sports and also get to add my own spin on it that people enjoy. And I get to put things out that tell a story and get to highlight important things happening in the sports world and important people. And that's incredible. I can't believe that I get to do and be around the people that 8-year-old me wanted to be around.
Yeah. I think, for me, I was, like Garrett, I was always a huge sports fan growing up in the 90s, a lot of the teams I liked were just good in the 90s, and that made me into a really big-time sports fan. But on top of that, I've always been a very technical person, and I love that in this industry, the technology is always changing. It's kind of a double whammy, right? Like, every year, there's something new in the industry, some new innovation. On top of that, you work in an industry where you never know where the outcome is going to be, especially with sports, right? Like, anything can happen. So, like, every single year is just like a brand new, it's like a brand new job almost sometimes. You know, some years feel more like others, but like every single year there's new challenges to deal with in the workplace from a technical standpoint, from a logistics standpoint. You have to react to how the team's doing, whatever team you're working with, or whatever you're covering. So for me, the big thing is people say, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. I honestly, there's times this feels like a job, but like, I love what I'm doing. And a lot of times I have to sit back and say, God, I can't believe people pay me to do this. But that's the biggest part of me. If you love those aspects, that's what makes this industry interesting and exciting to me.
What about you, Justin? How did you answer that question when it was originally posed to you, and how do you wish you had answered it?
I just think there was more beyond what I answered. Just as I thought about it more, I initially just, I got to go to the White House with the 85 Bears when I worked in Chicago, and that, to me, that was, they won the Super Bowl the year I was born, and they didn't get to go then because of the Challenger explosion, and President Obama, who's from Chicago, invited them out, and I got to ride on the plane with them there and back in a day, and I had so much fun with that piece that I stayed up. We left at 6:30 in the morning, flight out to DC and back in one day. And I edited the piece the rest of that night until like midnight, made the mistake of giving Jim McMahon a mic and let him go from there. But I initially just answered it saying that I felt like it was a way for me to, it was kind of like what you said, Garrett, like being able to see sports figures that I had worked with. I've been a huge sports fan my whole life. It was a way for me to be involved. And when I initially got into it, I didn't realize there was finance as an option to be in sports. I thought being in sports, when I went to school, it was about being a radio play-by-play guy. And through different experiences and opportunities, I found out that's not exactly the route that I wanted to go, and ended up going through production. But we've gotten to sit down with the 86 champion Celtics team with Larry Bird and McHale and Parrish. And I remember watching them play on TV, and that was just awesome. And being able to travel to London when I worked with Chicago, and all the different cities that I got to travel to. And I know you travel a lot too, Garrett. It really helps expand your horizons. And I think that's the thing that I felt like I missed in my answer was it's not just about moments, specifically gameplay. It's about the bigger things, expanding your horizons and getting outside of yourself to see a different side of the world that you would probably not see outside of that. And I think that to me is the thing that is what I really enjoy the most. In addition to the technology and being part of the sports culture.
Yeah, that was good.
All right, let's get on to the producer conversation. Garrett, would you take us through your typical day-to-day as a producer?
Yeah, I think at the Big Ten Network, it's a lot more of like the traditional producer role. When you talk about being a producer, I kind of plan the shows. We do a lot of meetings and, planning and research and, trying to figure out what the best stories we want to tell are. And then from there, once we kind of get our crews assigned, I'm the one in charge of hiring the crews, handling the logistics with the subjects as far as like, booking travel, writing questions, doing all the pre-production stuff. And then, I go out on site. I hire a camera crew. I hire a sound guy. And I'm just the one kind of making sure that everything looks the way I want it to. I'm 90% of the time, the people we work with are people we've worked with for years here at BTN. So, I'm able to just say like, yeah, do the journey look, and we try and be creative. I give them a lot of flexibility as far as like if they have ideas based on where we're at or the locations or stuff. But, you know, for the most part, they know what we're looking for. I'm not trying to, you know, talk them into a look or a feel or something. So I'm lucky in that way. But, you know, it's more or less just me trying to get it to look and feel how I want it to. And then I sit down, I do the interviews. But for our show, the interview never, the questions never make air. So it's all just me kind of getting my interview subject to where I want to story-wise, or, you know, trying to bring the most out of them story-wise, I guess is probably a better way of putting it. I don't know that I necessarily try and get them to a place, but, you know, then I have to deal with all the legal releases as far as appearance releases and materials releases, location releases. Like, it's just a lot of details. And when I come back, I'll put together a rough A-roll for a story. I'll know what B-roll I want to use generally. I think that's important as far as like just knowing what B-roll I want to have and where it lives speeds up the edit so much. And then usually we have either 1 day or sometimes 2 days, depending on the story, with an editor, like a full-time editor at BTN, to kind of, we sit with them and we just talk them through the cut. Like, okay, here's my A-roll, here's what B-roll I'm thinking. And then we try and polish it together with them. So it's, the way I kind of describe it to people is more of like a project and story management producer role than it is, you know, the traditional technical producer role that you see more in college athletics, where you're a producer in college athletics, but you're handling like the shooting, the editing, everything else by yourself. And I still shoot and edit a little bit, but only because I have in the past in college athletics. You know, if there are people at BTN who do this job without ever touching a camera, you know, or even touching an edit machine, like they'll just get the transcripts and they'll rough out a script on paper, and then give it to the editor to A-roll themselves that day. So it's definitely a more traditional like TV producer role. But you know, they're just such a wide variety of kind of what a producer is. So I've definitely done a lot more than that in the past and been called a producer.
Yeah. I was going to jump in and say, producer at Notre Dame and most of the places I worked means just doing everything in video. You know, whether that's writing, ideation, story origination, to shooting, editing, interviewing, VFX, you know, graphics, color correction, color grading. We kind of ask our producers to be jacks of all trades. And, you know, that would be like a feature producer for us. You know, you talk about where my career is on the live side. That would be more, again, we call everybody a producer, but really you're a producer, you're a director, you're a technical director, you're a graphics operator, you're a replay operator, you're a camera operator some days.
Where you needed.
Yeah, totally where needed. You know, I think it's great when you can specialize. To me, that specialization comes in an environment where you can have time to specialize.
Yeah.
Or you have the staff to specialize, right? You know, you always see a triangle, right? You always want, you know, cheap, good, fast, right? And you get to pick two, right? And most people are only ever picking two.
Yeah.
But you know, with the amount of content we put out, you know, we have a good staff. I don't by any means want to say we're understaffed, because we're not. But the amount of content we put out, the amount of live games we produce, if you count our video board shows and live events, we produce over 280 live events a year. You know, it's hard to specialize, you know, when you have that, amount of content. But for us, we kind of have to be jacks of all trades. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I've never believed in the jack of all trades, master of none mantra. I believe in being well-rounded. And I believe our producers being well-rounded is going to help them when they do get to a place, maybe at another job or maybe at another structure, where they can specialize and they can do one thing. I can tell you right now, ESPN loves the producers and directors they hire out of control rooms who have come from school, SEC and ACC schools, because they know the technology going into the room. I think it's somebody like a Michael Sullivan, who is at Auburn forever, and now is a director for ESPN. He can walk into any room
and have a working knowledge of the technology in there, and help them through, you know, logistical issues or creative issues they might be having, or explain plainly to a replay operator how he wants something built, you know, in terms that a replay operator can understand. So I think that there's room for both. Obviously, I wish I was in a world where I could just specialize. That seems great. But I know a lot of at least college athletic departments don't have the luxury of working that way for one reason or another.
I'd say that's probably the same for us too. It's a lot of, you know, a lot of hats that you end up wearing just because you have the opportunity to go shoot and then putting it together and turning things around, and the amount of work that we have on our plates. It's helpful for everybody to be able to pitch in and have a versatile skill set enough to be able to, you know, make adjustments on the fly. So yeah, I think that's interesting. I think that, you know, Garrett's situation currently at Big Ten Network is probably more the outlier, a little bit more specialized. And I think understanding all the different elements, though, as Brock was just saying, is really important as you go to produce a video. So maybe we dig a little bit more into Garrett's day-to-day from an administrative standpoint. There's a lot of things that you listed on there, scripting, you know, reaching out to talent and starting that process and having your interview questions laid out. And I think a lot of it is stuff that people probably don't spend enough time on when they're producing content at large. So what does a project look like for you when you're going to interview someone for the journey, for their specific story? How does that all start, and how do you decide what you're going to do and the direction that you're going to take it?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times it's just finding the right stories, and they'll kind of, I don't want to say write themselves, but you know, you find the right story and it makes it a heck of a lot easier.
What goes into that story?
For us, like, we, you know, we'll research the heck out of something. Like, we want to make sure we have the right story. So, like, it's a lot of research off the top as far as, you know, trying to make calls ahead of time. You know, if I'm talking to a high school, or excuse me, a college athlete, you know, let's just say Nebraska for the heck of it, as an example, you know, if the story relates in any way to like their personality or who they are, you know, a lot of times I'll try and reach out to the high school coach. I'll just call their old high school coach on the phone and try and get a sense of like, who is this guy? You know, what are they like? What do you remember about him? And, you know, a lot of times that doesn't turn into me going to interview the high school coach, but it gives me that background and, you know, I'm able to write better questions and be more prepared, you know, when I'm doing it. Like I just make calls, ahead of my interviews. I kind of do pre-interviews basically whenever possible. It's not possible all the time, or I mean, probably even half the time, but whenever I can, I try to. I just try and learn as much as I can, because for me, what I've learned is I'm able to write those stories better, you know, when I have just everything in my head. If I'm looking at questions that I've written, like I write my questions usually the day before my interview, and it takes a few hours, but you know, I try not to look at them. When I was first at Big Ten Network, like my first year, I was kind of nervous. I hadn't done a lot of like feature interviews before. I had, but it was, you know, once a month at best. And so I just wasn't used to it. And I'd look at my questions all the way down and I felt like I'd miss half their answer, you know, and I thought I was listening. You know, it's not that I thought I was not catching stuff, but now that I do more of that research and prep beforehand, and I realize how important that is, like I hardly ever look down at my questions, and I'm realizing now like how much I probably missed that first year. Like even when I thought I was listening, I wasn't catching as much, and I'm able to ask better follow-up questions just by doing the prep work. And I guess, you know, maybe what you were asking is a little bit more detailed than just kind of that prep work. But I mean, to me, that's everything for this job. And it, you know, thankfully at BTN, I'm able to do that because, you know, to your point, I'm a little more specialized where I have the time to just focus on, you know, one or two projects at a time rather than kind of stretching myself the way you do a little bit more with teams and, you know, athletic departments.
So once you get into scripting and writing out your questions, and you get to the location. You said you do some waivers, and you're doing releases and talking. Do you also try and talk to current coaches when you're doing athlete stories or other administrative, and just building out more of a roster and relationships with other people while you're on site?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. It's, if we're doing a story about an athlete, and 90% of them are athletes, we don't do a lot of coaches' stories. Usually our coach stories come if, there's a new coach in the conference, a football team hires a new coach, basketball team. But, we'll try and talk to the player, the coach, usually a teammate if we can, just to kind of get, a sense of who they are from a peer. And then, from there, if there's anyone else that the story involves, we'll try and go out and interview parents or, if it does have to do with something that happened when they were in high school, maybe a high school coach or something. But yeah, we just try and really round out our relationships on campus through those interviews and, even build the relationship doing those interviews. I think that's one of the biggest keys in being a producer, just building relationships. I've building relationships with the communications people, even at the athletic departments that we've worked with, is huge. Cause they'll come to us with stories then, cause they trust us. They know that we're not going to burn them on stuff. They know that we're not going to, we're not out there looking for gotcha stories on our show. And so they'll come to us and they trust us. And we've gotten great access pieces where we'll follow an athlete, around for days at a time, or they'll let us into sensitive situations and things like that because of the relationships we build when we go out on campus, with the athletes, the coaches, and the communication staff. But yeah, that part's huge. The logistics are huge as far as, doing legal releases and booking travel and hiring crews and making sure that I'm on the same page as the communication staff of the universities on the time for the interviews and the date and what's fair game. And when I say fair game, they're not telling us ask about this, don't ask about that, but more just that they know, what we're allowed to do. If we're allowed to film practice, okay, you get 15 minutes and then you have to be out. You can't stay for the whole practice, or you can stay for the whole practice, but don't shoot this part of it. So those kind of things is what I mean when I say fair game a little more than they dictate any content.
I think there's a very clear delineation still in the industry, between what a producer is at a major network, right?
Yeah.
And I think you did a good job of just describing what a producer really is as a major network, right? You are at the very, very core, a storyteller, and that's what you're worried about. That is your main job.
100%.
Is what story do I tell, and how do I tell it, right?
Yep.
Everything else, you have other people, you have freelancers, you have other staff that you're directing, to help bring that story to life, right? It's whereas on the, you have good insight on this, Garrett, I would compare and contrast that to what a similar feature you would make at Minnesota, when doing Brick by Brick, what that looked like versus The Journey, right? Two very similar programs, but I guarantee your role was drastically different in the amount you, not that you had to do, you're doing different things, but on the scope of your role on Brick by Brick versus The Journey.
Yeah, for sure. Brick by Brick at Minnesota was our Journey-esque show. We basically took their feel and, imitated it. We kind of put our own little twist on it, and it was only for web, and it was 8 minutes long rather than 24. But on that, when you're in a college athletic department, at Minnesota, I was, for our similar show to The Journey, I was shooting every game, traveling with the team. I was, setting up all the interviews as far as doing the logistics, similar stuff to what I'm doing now. But then I'm also writing the questions. I'm also setting up the room we're doing the interviews in, as far as lighting, as far as cameras, as far as, like, I determine the look. We were shooting everything in 60, and I was like, let's do this in 24 because it looks cinematic. And, like, I mean, just, like, everything all the way down to the technical specs of, like, how we were doing anything was kind of my call. And it just, it's so much more involved. And then, like, you know, I go back and I edit until 3 a.m. to get the piece out the next day. It's just, it's, you just kind of had your hand in everything. Like, Brock's point earlier about, like, you know, and Justin too, I think you both kind of said it, there's that specialization that I have at Big Ten Network that you just don't get, I don't think, often in college athletics, or, I mean, even with pro teams, or, you know, it's just, it's such a rare thing to be able to specialize. And it just, I don't know. I just feel like as a producer in college athletics, you're kind of a, not jack of all trades, because I don't think that's, that has such a negative connotation to it, but you just have a broader range of, you know, what you're being asked to do, and a wider variety of skill sets that you're exercising on a daily basis than you do when you're, like, you know, more of a true network producer.
I think one of the interesting elements is that while shooting all of that content at Minnesota, you probably had way more insight and knowledge of what kind of content you already had captured, as opposed to trying to make sure that you're, when you hand stuff off to the editor now, that you're not 100% sure what they have. You have an idea, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting. It's like, there'll be times where, you know, I'll come back from a shoot and I'll be going through footage, and it's just like, you know, I'll be sitting with my editor, and sometimes we'll just kind of skim together, and it's like, oh wow, he got that shot. Like, you know, I'm so used to in previous roles, like, I shot 90% of the footage, so I know what exists. And all of a sudden it's like, I kind of have an idea, you know, like, I'm watching them shoot it, so I see, you know, what they're shooting, but I don't know, you know, are they, how wide are they? How tight are they? Like, what are they focused on in that play? Like, it's just such an interesting thing to come back and, you know, I don't really know what we got until I put it in the computer, as opposed to just seeing it through the eyepiece myself. It's such a different, like, on interviews, obviously we'll have monitors and all that kind of stuff. Like, when I do an interview setup, I know what they got, but it's just, it's such a different world coming back. And sometimes I'm surprised by what we got in a good way. And, you know, every now and then it's like, I saw the camera pointed at that. How did we not get it? You know, those kind of things. So it's definitely a different mindset coming back and not having shot everything yourself. And I mean, I still like shooting. There are a lot of times I'll take a camera with me to a shoot if we're going to do B-roll, and I'll still shoot, you know, a second angle if we're following an athlete around or if we're doing, like, a practice. So I still love that side of it, just because I came from college athletics, because my career was spent shooting and editing. I still try and do it whenever I can, and I like better when I do that, just selfishly knowing that I have it. But my shooters almost always get better than what I get anyway, because they're doing it full time and I do it, you know, once every couple weeks now.
They got to show you where the white balance is every now and then?
Oh, I'm not that far gone, man. It's been 3 years, but I still remember the white balance. But, like, it's little details that I forget. Like, I've been kind of going back and watching some of my older stuff lately, just for the heck of it, to go through, you know, all my best stuff and try and keep what I can. And it's like, I feel like I've grown so much as a shooter in the last, like, 5-6 years, even not having done it as often for the last 3. And I look back on what I did back then and I'm like, oh wow, no, that was actually decent. Like, maybe I haven't gotten much better. Maybe I'm rusty. Maybe I was better when I was doing it every, you know, couple days rather than every couple weeks. It's such an interesting skill set to try and keep fresh when you're not doing it all the time.
Going back to your comments about being able to do the interview without looking down at your sheet, what comes up in those conversations that you feel that almost seem, the follow-up questions almost seem to get the better answers because you're digging a little bit further and a little bit deeper?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I think that, you know, I've asked a lot of follow-up questions, and I can't necessarily think of one off the top of my head that like stands out, but where, you know, the follow-up question goes a different direction than I ever thought it would. You know, if I was just listening for the one or two like key words that I wanted to get out of the interview, I would have missed something that like I asked a follow-up question on, and all of a sudden, like, we did another like 2 to 3 questions about that topic that I had no intention of jumping onto. You know, it's just, I think the ability to kind of be flexible like that in an interview is huge. And to me, that comes from the preparation and not, you know, just knowing the story up and down, because you're able to listen better and, you know, you go a direction that maybe you wouldn't have otherwise, because yeah, to your point, Justin, that's definitely where the interesting stuff comes from, in my opinion. And it's sometimes you don't use it, you know, sometimes you ask a follow-up question and the athlete or coach like rambles about something and it's totally off topic and you don't care if you have it, but that like 1 out of 10 times that it's useful and it reveals something to you that you didn't know, all of a sudden it's like, okay, that's my like key bite for this story. And I didn't even plan on asking that question. So that 1 out of 10 times makes it worth, you know, the follow-up.
Yeah. We work with a lot of student broadcasters who, you know, do interviews on a regular basis on and off air. And, a lot of times they'll just write out their questions and they'll just go question, 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 question. And they won't even listen to the response, the athlete's giving, when in reality, the best questions, like you said, are going to come following up on an answer they gave, or digging a little bit deeper, or digging for more than just that 3-word answer and moving on to the next question. I think that's important for anybody getting into the industry and looking to be either a producer or an on-air talent, is knowing how to listen and how to veer off course. You know, you want to get the questions you need to get in to tell your story, right? But if you hear something that needs followed up on, then you got to, you know, I know this is kind of journalism 101, but like you got to dig into that and follow up on in a way that's productive to the conversation.
I think you brought up a good point there. It's more about listening and following up, but we've all been a part of interviews where you're getting 3-word answers, like you mentioned. Any ideas on how to pull more out of those interviews or change direction to get them to open up? Or is it just about just continuing to work to see if you can get a longer answer and then keep building off of that?
For me, we're willing to like cut around in interviews. You know, we'll chop up interviews and kind of, you know, push answers together, you know, stuff like that in the edit. So I don't mind, like, if they're giving me short answers, I'll just keep prying, keep pushing, like knowing that, you know, maybe a 3-word answer can go together with a 10-word answer that I get, you know, right after that, if I keep pushing. You know, I just, it's simple things like, you know, well, you said this, like, what do you mean by that? Or like, you know, rather than letting him get away with cliches, like, you know, I just want to bring my A game today, you know, like, okay, like what is your A game? What's a time that you really feel like you had your A game? And like, how does this compare how you feel today as how you felt then? Like just really trying to find ways to take those 3-word answers and turn them into something bigger. Cause usually if you give them a prompt like that, they're more willing to go somewhere. Like a lot of these athletes, like they just don't, it's not that they're like trying to hide stuff from you. It's just that they don't have a lot of experience with it, or they're like, I don't know. They're just used to being kind of short and brief, like in their real life. And they don't understand that like we need that long answer. And so if you ask a good follow-up question, 90% of the time I've found they'll go there. You know, they're not trying to be short just for short sake. They're not trying to be short to kind of screw you out of your interview. Like they just don't really know how to give the response that you're looking for. And if you ask the right follow-up question, I think a lot of the times I've found they're willing to go with you.
Yeah. And I think a lot of them letting their guard down comes before the interview. I think letting them know that, hey, I know who you are. I understand your background. I understand your sport. You know, I understand the current atmosphere around it, you know, and weaving those things into your conversation before you sit down with them. Like little things like just sitting down and be like, oh man, I saw what you did against Duke last week. That was insane. But could he even stop you? Like how hard was it for them to defend you, you know? And just like bringing that conversation up off camera to understand that, like, oh, this person actually knows me, you know, as a person, or knows something. That another good one is look at their social media a lot before you go talk to them, right? And see what they're posting and bring up a post about their social media, you know, connect that, you know, connect them back to you. I think a lot of this, I've never been a teacher, but I think a lot of it, a lot of these tricks are what you do. I don't want to call them tricks, but a lot of these strategies are what you do to connect with, you know, high school, middle school students. If you were a teacher, right, is like,
yeah,
getting on their level in some way and showing that you have the common interest, right? A big one, you know, a lot of guys played Fortnite, you know, like a year ago, you know, and they'd post about it all the time, talking to them about Fortnite, right? Like, just casual conversation, something they're interested in, is going to let them let their guard down and know that, like, oh, okay, this guy's just a person like me, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, I kind of said it earlier, but that ability to connect with people and do it quickly, I think, is a really key role to having a good interview. Because, you know, I usually on my end, like, if we're getting a coach, he's coming in, he's sitting down, he's getting mic'd up, and he wants to go. Like, he wants to get in and out as fast as possible. You know, and so I have the 60 seconds that our sound guy is taking to mic him up and our cameraman's making last adjustments to kind of make that connection. And it's, you know, like, yeah, man, like that last game of yours, like, I saw that you guys did this or that. Like, I thought that was a really interesting, like, player formation. Or, like, you know, oh man, I had a chance to, if it's a player, you know, I had a chance to talk to your parents on the phone the other day to ask you a couple questions, like, you know, what do you think they told me to ask? And, you know, just try and find ways to get them to laugh and lighten up a little bit. And yeah, you got to find a way to loosen people up in 60 seconds. It's the producer equivalent of like the elevator speech.
I use hometowns a lot with college kids, especially like freshmen and younger kids, because it's like, either they're from somewhere that I've lived before, or I know somebody there, or I know somebody who, another athlete who went to their high school or something, you know? So like that kids always want to talk about their hometown or where they came from, you know, and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a good one too. I use that one a lot too.
Awesome. Yeah. There's a lot of good tips in there. After you get the interview and you're on location and you go through your whole list and you get back to the edit room, what does that process look like for you and putting that together? Because obviously we talked about how juxtaposed it was when you were at Minnesota. You kind of already knew what you had, and now that you don't know specifically 100% what you have, you're still trying to put together the best story. So where does that start with the, you know, just focusing on the interviews and laying out some of that?
Yeah, 90% of the time, like, our stuff is really interview driven. I mean, we'll do some accessy type features and that, but I almost always, you know, we use a transcription website to transcribe our interviews for us. And so I'll just sit down with my transcriptions of all my interviews. I'll highlight, I'll kind of label them, like, okay, I try and lay out my stories. Basically, my wife is a fifth grade teacher, and so, you know, she describes it like, explain it like I'm a fifth grader. You know, what is your story? Like, okay, he is good, he went through this thing, here's how that affected him, and here's like where he's at now, you know, is like a super base, like fifth grade layout. And so I'll try and lay it out in, you know, 4 to 5 things that I want to hit like that. And when I'm going through my transcription, I'll highlight, and then next to the answer, I'll kind of mark, like, you know, part 1, part 2, part 3, part 4, part 5, you know, whatever, just to know, like, if I glance at that transcript real quick, if I'm like in, you know, part 4 talking about like how he recovered from this, you know, horrible injury or something, I can immediately look at my transcript and say, like, you know, okay, that's a part 4 bite. Let's take a look at that as a possibility for this. So I really try and do a lot of organization before I ever lay stuff down on a timeline. And part of that is just like, I'm really lucky that I have the time to do that. You know, like, I know there's very few edits where I don't have at least like one full day after my interviews before I go into edit. And that allows me to use that data to prep and lay it all out. But to me, it's kind of my process, and it's maybe a little more tedious than it needs to be. Like, I've probably made that my process and kind of gotten locked into it at times more than I should. Where if I don't have that, I like kind of feel like I'm freaking out and I'm underprepared and I'm going to make my editors hate me. But to me, I've just found comfort in that where I can highlight, I can label. And then from there, I kind of lay it out in little chunks of like, what part of the story is this? And, you know, I just try not to get tied to any one thing. You know, if I find something in that interview that was better than what I went into thinking I wanted to get, like, you know, I'll be willing to take the story another direction. You know, I always want to talk to my boss about that, so he knows I'm not going to surprise him with a story we didn't talk about. But, you know, it's just being willing to be flexible, but also just to me, it's a lot of just prep. It's a lot of the tedious things that like people never see that I think make me really, you know, excel at my job in the way that, you know, I do.
Yeah, Brock, when you guys are producing content, we talked about it at the beginning that it's more about you'd wear a lot of hats. And so when it comes down to some of these different elements, I think Garrett's shared quite a few tips that people can take and cherry pick and make do with their situation. How in your world, how does all that come together?
I think one mistake you can fall into when you're producing and shooting and editing and doing it all from the ground up is you can get caught up in one aspect of it. I know I'm kind of a cinematography nerd, so I get caught up in the lighting and the look a lot, right? And really it needs to be the story first. And you need to think about where those assets come from for that story. And sometimes that can be a cell phone video and that can be okay, right? And if you're a huge, you know, cinematography person, then you need to kind of let go of the look of it because you already have that bite and you're probably not going to get it better and you're not going to get it in the moment, right? Same with editing. You might be a really, you know, dynamic, hype, short form editor, right? And what I'm really talking about is shoehorning, right? You want to shoehorn your best skill into the piece, which is the piece doesn't always call for it, right? And you need to step back and take the things that Garrett has said and say, like, this is the priority. The story is the priority, right? There's a reason at a network level they break out those jobs, right? And they put the producer at the top because the story is the most important, right? So I think when you focus on that first and you get your story laid out in a way, knowing that the story can change, you know, Garrett, I'm sure you've had so many stories turn out completely different from what you thought they were going to be at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Knowing that it can change, but if you have a general outline, questions, a general, you know, script, for lack of a better word, then everything else is going to fall into place a little bit better and it's going to make more sense, as opposed to starting with like, ooh, I want this interview look and I want everybody to come through this interview look that I have. That's going to look great. That's going to set the tone for this piece, right? Like, the look has to follow the story, right? And the edit has to follow the story. So, you know, if you think about it from a, you know, a triangle from the top down and the stories at the top, you know, that's the best tip I can give people who have to wear a lot of hats and have to, you know, do a lot of the work themselves. They have to do it with a really small team, where everybody's crossing over.
Yeah. Like I feel like even watching, you know, stories and just trying to look at what other people are doing, like I will watch a really good story that is shot on like a cell phone with crappy audio way more than I will watch like, oh, look at this beautiful cinematic footage, but this story sucks. Like, to me, story tops all, and I'm not like, you know, make it look good, make it sound good. Like, obviously that's ideal, but to me, the story is what drives viewership. Like I really will. I'll watch just an incredibly poorly done, you know, shoot, or like the interview look like crap. But like, if the story's good, it'll hook me. It'll keep me there and I'll keep watching. I don't feel like it's quite as likely to happen the other way around.
Yeah. You get into, you know, all the pieces definitely have to fit together for some of these, you know, for a absolutely amazing video. And at the end of the day, if the story is leading the way, you have, you know, your video and like Brock was talking about, the lighting and all of that is in support of the story and the if it's a dramatic story, if it's a more of a news story, just all those different elements can kind of help you lead down that path to really create more engagement through the story.
Well, yeah, and like knowing your story and feeling good about your story, like leads those visuals and audio to follow that, you know, like if you're driving story first in your mind, like you're going to be thinking more about like, how can I make this look that matches that story rather than trying to match your story to your look.
And the insight you get, both of you have provided, I think is helpful for anyone at any position, right? Because I could take, you know, I need to do more pre-production or, you know, writing up my scripts, but then I need to go through them and think about the story a little bit more. And any little extra details that you can add to what you're doing fit within the timeline of which what you're able to do, I think is a leg up for everybody as well. So I think that's a great, great thing to start with.
I think for me, like, you know, I don't want it to sound like you have to do these things. Like I'm talking to people, like I know the limitations of college athletics. I know the limitations of time and like resources that you have. Like I know that my job is not like normal. So when I talk to people about it, I always feel weird, you know, telling them like, this is how I do it. And these are tips you can glean from me. Cause I know that they're not all realistic. Like I know that that's not something that,
no,
that you can do in college athletics as often, but like, I think that you can try to start applying some of those things like in the best way you can. I think there's things to glean from it, but it's just, yeah, I always try and find that balance when I'm talking to people about, you know, how do I give advice that like applies from my job to what other people are doing? Cause I just know that I'm like I say it over and over, like I feel really, really lucky to have the time and resources I do. Cause I know that's not common.
I think of it as like, not that, you know, you're exactly this level, no offense, but like, I think of it as like, if I could sit down with Roger Deakins and talk to him about cinematography for an hour, right? Like I understand, like I'm not going to work on the same budget as him, you know, in something like Sicario, but like I can still glean things from him that I could take into my, you know, practical work every single day, you know, that's scaled back, or it's this one little nugget, or it's a, you know, these couple things I'm going to try next shoot. So I think, you know, laying it out the way you did is important to let people know why you do your job your way. And then people can be judicious and glean from that and understand that, hey, these are the resources and the time I have, but I can take these three things, you know, and implement them on my next interview or on my next piece that I do.
Yeah. To me, it's just about prioritization, you know, like, you know, I prioritize the pre-production side of things, because I think that sets me up better everywhere else. It saves me time in other ways. So I don't know. I think even looking back to what I did in college athletics, I could have found time to do some of that pre-production stuff that would have saved me time on the back end.
Yeah, iterate and practice and keep moving forward, right?
Absolutely.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives there. The quickest way to get us to stop this podcast is to not tell anyone about it. So leave us your 5-star rating and don't forget to subscribe so you're the first person to catch each new episode. And remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.